It is a little bit afternoon, and that means it's time for Not For Kids Only here at 104.3 and 104.7 KHUM, cutting Eureka Arcata and foster homes everywhere. Not For Kids Only looks at programs in our community that aim to help children. Today, I have an interview with Roger Golick, who is the Foster and Youth Services Coordinator at Humboldt County Office of Education. He's been with them for a little over 7 years, and he was at Eureka City Schools before that as a guidance technician for 12 years, and then before that 9 years at the Redwood Community Action Agency, where he worked in the Youth Service Bureau with homeless and runaway youth. It's a small program whenever he started with the Foster and Youth Services Coordinator over at the Humboldt County Office of Education. There was this legislation, AB 490, which was created in 2004 to assist and support foster youth in achieving their educational goals. So, Roger, do you think that this program has done just that?
It's come a long ways. And so what we recognized, what the legislators recognized back in 2000 or so, when we began talking about this at the state level, was we recognized that foster youth as a group within education perform at the lowest levels of any subpopulation you want to talk about, both in terms of graduation rates, testing rates, issues of like discipline, attendance, all those really poor academic outcomes for a whole variety of reasons. And so the state recognized that. So then what they did was to look and see what kinds of support services could be put in place within education to support and improve those academic outcomes. So that was the intention of the specific legislation, AB 490, which passed in 2004 and has been amended over the years several times to broaden the scope of the services and brings specific services that education and other county-based agencies are to bear to support, you know, foster youth in having better educational outcomes. Have we seen substantial improvements in outcomes? That's a difficult question to answer because I think the data is mixed.
One of the things that it strives to do, though, is to keep children in the same schools, even if they move, like in the foster care system. And then
there's some basic protections, really, some support systems built into the legislation which revolve around school stability and school access. But so because we recognize that foster youth disproportionately to their peers often are forced to move schools due to their personal circumstances or where they happen to be residing as they move from a group home or a foster home, maybe back to their family or to another set of. So foster youth are highly mobile, and that's very disruptive to them educationally. So one of the main protections is called school of origin. So as a foster youth may move where they live, they are entitled to remain in their school of origin. So if we have a student who's attending Eureka High, they come into foster care, but the only foster home that they can find, or maybe they find a family member who's living in Arcata. In the old days, they would probably just transfer that student to Arcata High. But sometimes that process would take weeks for a whole variety of reasons, right? We know that unintended mid-year school moves, students fall back, lose about 6 months academically. So the idea is to try to keep them in their school of origin so that student has the right to remain to keep going to Eureka High. They may have natural peer supports, connected with teachers. Maybe they're involved with like the arts or sports or something, which connects students, right? So what happens is the education, the high schools, the districts social services, we're all bound to work together to try to the greatest extent possible, keep that student in their school of origin, to keep them as much consistency as possible.
Do they often stay in their school of origin?
We try very hard. In Humboldt County, it's very difficult because we're a large rural county, and our districts are, we have 31 separate school districts. So, and we have, we don't have enough foster homes spread out around the county to keep them kind of, to find out like a foster home or maybe a family member within their community. So often that's the districts and the agencies strive to do that. But just the realities of the lack of foster homes or the ability to keep them in their community safely often doesn't allow that. So we have to look at, is it practical? Is it in the student's best interest? So if you have maybe a high school student, yeah, it's more doable for them to transfer, to go on a daily basis. Maybe they're living in Arcata, McKinleyville. They can make it to Eureka. It's okay. But if you're talking about a first grader, second grader, that's a long time to be transporting on a daily basis. So we have to look at the what's in the best interest of the child. So often we do have to transfer schools. But then we're bound to work with the schools to make that happen as seamlessly as possible. So another aspect of AB 490 is that every school district is charged that they have to have a foster youth liaison to act as an advocate and help support those foster youth and those caregivers who are working in housing and supporting the foster youth. So part of my job at the county level is to make sure that all the districts are in compliance, that we have school liaisons and school administrators that are educated and up to date on what the legislation is and how to make that work. We do technical assistance and ongoing training to help make sure that we provide them with strategies and not just what the law is, but with strategies on how to work with foster youth and how to bring in supports to make them more successful. How this is funded is in the past, when AB 490 was first passed, it's a competitive grant cycle, 3-year grant cycle. So that's the way it's been since I've been on board. Now with the way public education is now funded, called Local Control Funding Formula, LCFF, it's a new way of funding education. Within that new formula, it is written into legislation that foster youth are a group that school districts have to pay attention to foster youth, and they need to account for their academic success. So we're hoping that this new funding formula, not that they will necessarily get extra money, but they will be accountable to the state for performance outcomes of foster youth. So hopefully when they're building their local plans, called LCAP, Local Control Accountability Plans, every district has to have one, they'll be building a plan in for success for both their foster and homeless youth. So Humboldt County, we do receive a grant. In the past 5-6 years, it's been minimal. It's been like about $50,000.
Will you still receive the grant on top of this other funding?
So with the new, there was some new legislation passed called AB 854. And with the new legislation, there's been new monies infused into the state foster youth services program. So that's been really nice. Basically, it was a small budget, only about $15 million statewide. Wow. And if you think about probably about 40,000 or so foster youth, give or take, at any one time, that's not a lot of money, right? So they added another $10 million, which is great. So our new budget this year went up substantially, but we didn't get the money until halfway through the year, right? So it's been, so we're building a program as we go. And now what we're waiting for is to hear how this money's going to look projecting out for the next couple of years. And that's in flux right now. So on one hand, we are operating with about $50,000 locally, which isn't much. We have about, at any given time, maybe in the K-12s, have about 300 foster youth, give or take. It's been a challenge, but we're hoping with this new funding formula, we may be able to pull in some new money.
What would you do with additional funding?
So additional funding, a couple of things that we would do is one of the things that is required under the new legislation is performance outcomes of measuring, tracking our foster youth and measuring their performance outcomes. So what we are doing is we're at HCOE, we're hiring a new person onto my staff, a foster youth data technician. And so we're running a program where we will be able to, in real time, track all of our kindergarten through 12th grade students, where they're going to school, who their social or probation officer is, who holds ed rights, and then more importantly, how's their attendance? How are they doing grade wise? Are they having issues, social emotional issues, so that we can know, like, up to date, we can pull reports and know how are our ninth graders doing? What's the status? Are they involved? Are our ninth through 12th graders involved in college going courses? Is someone having problems with attendance? What can we do to help alleviate that attendance problem? Are they having an issue, social emotional issue that might be getting them in trouble? What can we do to alleviate that, right? So we've not had that program before to be able to mark their progress on a weekly basis. That's one big step forward. And this is with some infusion of some money that we've got from the state under this AB 854.
Okay. Will the students still have an amenity?
Ironically, when I was hired 7.5 years ago, even though schools were charged with supporting foster youth, we had no real legal means of knowing who the foster youth were for protection of confidentiality. What happened was a couple of things. Originally, the local superior court developed what's called a standing court order. And that allowed for the first time for social services, probation, CASA, other organizations, county council, education, who work with foster youth in education to communicate with each other without having an individual release of information from that child's attorney on every kid, right? That was just a logistical nightmare, right? So for the first time, starting in 2009, we in education were able to communicate with all the other critical agencies to identify who's the foster youth, where are they going to school, you know, all those things. We all operate within the confines of confidentiality, so only selected people, like the foster youth liaisons, administrators, maybe they're a special education, so they're a special ed teacher, social workers. So within the confines of professional confidentiality, we're able to share information about foster youth. And this data program will allow that to happen in a confidential legal way. So we'll be able to kind of be a hub, in a sense. So we'll be a conduit between social services and probation, their foster youth, and then back out to the schools. Now, not everyone at the schools will have access to that information, right? So that's kind of where we're pushing out. First, you know, understanding who our foster youth are, how they're doing on a daily basis, and then putting some real case management services within the real school site local level to support the kids. And then we will really be able to track outcomes. we will know, are we doing an effective job? Are we getting our kids to stay in school, stay graduated, be college ready? And then the transition services, the goal, again, of this new legislation, AB 854, is not just within K-12, but also looking at preschool kids, foster youth, making sure that they're involved in preschool, helping them transition to kindergarten, first grade, and then on through getting them graduated. So we have excellent partnerships right now with Humboldt State University and College of the Redwoods. So making sure once we get them graduated from high school, where are they going? Can we assist them in transitioning to College of the Redwoods or HSU or another, maybe a vocational tech school, so that they just don't stop their sort of education when they're done with high school, because we know there's so much more. And there are financial services available for them, incentives, and by...
aren't there a lot of scholarships for foster?
There's not just scholarships, but there's specific grants that are for foster and former foster youth. Chafee being one. And there's a lot of other financial assistance that can come. What we find for those students who do make it to junior college or four-year college, it's partly the financial aspect, but it's really that these kids are on their own. Kids, I call them kids. So they're in college, right? Young adults. They're on their own. They often don't have a family like you and I. Well, I can't speak for you. Like I had, right?
No, I have a wonderful family.
So if something went wrong when I came up to College of the Redwoods, you know, I could pick up the phone and say, my books got stolen. I need something, you know, or something like that. Or I'm running out of food. My roommate ate all my food, right? Often former foster youth don't have that support system, right? So with this new legislation and these new partnerships, we're hoping to develop those transitional support services so that we can help them get to there and then support them when they're there, because there's all kinds of things that we face as young adults. In the past, one of the things that we noticed was that when someone turned 18 and they were in foster care, they were exited from the system, often just, and that was it, no support. And they often ended up, you know, on the streets.
Even if they hadn't finished their final year of school?
If they could stay in foster care until they finished high school, and then that was it. Right? So legislation was passed called AB 12. So now students who turn 18, foster youth who turn 18, they can choose to stay in as what's called the non-minor dependent, and they can receive case management services, but there's much more flexibility. They're an adult. They're their own adult, but they can receive financial support from social services as well as case management support. So if they want to continue with school, if they want to go work, if they want to maybe continue, let's say they were in a treatment facility dealing with drugs and drugs and alcohol. So AB 12 provides extended care up through their 21st birthday. So like many of us who turned 18, you know, we made mistakes. We needed some support as we figured out how to become a young adult. So that's also been in place within the last 3 or 4 years. And we're seeing some really good results from that.
Is there any good place for anyone to go to find out more information?
So I think whether it's a foster youth themselves, a former foster youth, a caregiver, somebody CASA, somebody working, or a family member. I think if they have questions about supporting their kids in education, they can call us at Humboldt County Office of Education. And so our office number, and we will point them in the right direction. If we'll figure out, you know, whatever the question is, and we'll get them connected and help them. So I think the best thing to do would be to call our program, call me, at 445-7187 at Humboldt County Office of Education. We have a webpage. If you go to HCOE and look for Foster and Homeless Education Services as well, we're online. And then we'll take it from there.
Thank you so very, very much, Roger Golick, for that fabulous, fabulous interview. Thank you for listening to Not For Kids Only today. It is a program where we look at programs within organizations within our community that aim to help children. And Roger Golick, once again, is the Foster and Youth Services Coordinator at the Humboldt County Office of Education. Coming up here in just a couple minutes, going to put on something from Mavis Staples up next on KHOME.